Hey everyone, welcome back to the Young Turks. Anna Kasparian and Brett Ehrlich with you. Brett's gonna stick around for the post game. I didn't even ask you if you would or could.
Oh, you have to, I thought.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have to.
I didn't know it was an option. If it was an option, I would never be on a post game. I'd be out living my life, cruising the streets, drinking some brews, then Ubering home, because that's responsible. But since I have to, yeah. I'll do it.
You have to. It's gonna be
I'm trying my wedding ring back on because I left mine at home. I left the house in such a rush this morning I couldn't find it. But I did find a rubber band, so I've been doing that. I'm new to this.
Yeah.
Watch our old post game on.
Did this make you force Anna? Is this what made you force to make sure that he's gonna stay on today?
That
so you have to be here for the post game. It's because you just saw what he's done to himself.
Yes, I want to do an update to a post game that we did last week. It was a fan fave. Just keeping it real. That doesn't mean everyone loved it, but a lot of people did. So we'll do a little follow up to
everyone
that.
Everyone loved it, Anna.
Did everyone?
They? I don't know. I think it's hard to get like consensus on anything. So I'm sure there were some people who didn't like it. But nonetheless, I think overall people enjoyed it. All right, real quick, I want to read some TYT Lives and then I want to get right into the stories because there's a lot and I want to make sure we do as much as possible. Opinionated Whore writes in on Twitter. And says, if they did care about job creation, referring to the Trump administration and Republicans, we'd be pumping billions into clean energy and infrastructure to cope with climate change. So that's exactly right. California right now is doing pretty great things with renewable energy. It's creating jobs. It's obviously also very beneficial to the environment. But oh well. Eric says, Brett is way overdressed.
Thank you. You should have seen Pop Trigger today. Where I wore predominantly nothing.
Jeez.
Mostly nipple hair.
Okay. All right. I just got a printout of the updated death toll in Mexico. So I want to get right to that story.
It's pretty
devastating. All right. A powerful earthquake has struck a town near Mexico City. And so far, as of this moment, the death toll has reached 100 people. It was a magnitude 7.1 earthquake, and we do have some footage that we will toss to right now as B-roll as I, you know, give you some more details on what's going on. So these videos were actually shared to us by a viewer by the name of Jorge Oropesa. So I want to thank him for sharing this with us. And that is, you know, a scene featuring people on, you know, these tourist boats, and you can also see some damage there. The highways are destroyed. There are buildings that have been destroyed. During the quake, more than 20 buildings and other structures in Mexico City fell, including at least 2 schools, officials said, crushing cars and trapping some people inside. It also came less than 2 weeks after the most powerful earthquake in Mexico in a century, a magnitude 8.1 quake that killed at least 90 people, destroyed thousands of homes, and was felt by tens of millions of people in Mexico and in Guatemala. So the incredible thing is that this earthquake happened on the anniversary of a huge earthquake that occurred in Mexico City in 1985. It killed as many as 10,000 people in Mexico. And so there were individuals doing earthquake drills as this quake hit, which is amazing. And it's also devastating. I mean, all these natural disasters are striking at once, and you know, people are losing their homes, they're losing their lives. And I mean, I don't know what else to say about it other than it's just so incredibly depressing.
There are a lot of factors that go into, because we're both from the Valley and we lived through the Northridge earthquake of 1994. And that was a 6.8 earthquake. Things to know about the Richter scale is it's an exponential scale. It's not like a linear scale. Mm-hmm. So the bigger it is over, you know, a number, it actually gets exponentially larger. So a 7.1 quake is much stronger than a 6.8 quake. Another aspect of it that goes into consideration is the time of day. The Northridge earthquake was at 4:31 in the morning,
right,
and people were in their homes, as opposed to earthquakes like this one. And then there was one in San Francisco in the 80s during a World Series game where people are out and about.
Right.
And each situation brings its own dangers, not to mention the location and the kind of what's underneath the city and where a city is built. So when you talk about Mexico City and earthquakes, a lot of people are more afraid. There had been reports from the previous earthquake where folks, even though that was off the coast to the south, people felt it in Mexico City, and out of fear they did what they do in Mexico City, which is more often run out into the street. Mm-hmm. Because underneath Mexico City, a lot of it is built on a lake bed as opposed to hard bedrock, which lends itself more to stable construction. So there's a lot of factors that go into it that, you see them all play out at once, and it increases the devastation, not to mention all the collateral issues like gas leaks that may be triggered.
That's
as you
right.
saw fires, and then buildings that, depending on when they were created and built, are engineered to withstand quakes like this or not. And then you'll see different pockets that just randomly suffered more devastation than others based on, the geological underpinnings of that site.
Exactly. Yeah. So unfortunately, the death toll is expected to rise as the story develops. This earthquake did strike today in the afternoon. And so obviously, these are preliminary reports. We'll have more information and more details as the story develops. But it's amazing. Last night, there was an earthquake in Los Angeles. It was small. No damage, no deaths, no nothing. But we're seeing these natural disasters all over the place right now. And it's concerning. Obviously, they're caused by different things.
It's just, and then also psychologically, it seems like it all is happening at once. And the effect that has on everybody. Also, the aftershock. So this is not the only quake that will happen. This came 2 weeks after the most recent quake. And then when there is any kind of earthquake, the immediate thing you think of is this a foreshock or the main event. If it's a 7.1 earthquake, immediately all the seismologists say there might be a larger one just around the corner. But even if there's not, I remember during the Northridge quake, there 5.5 earthquakes were pretty much the norm for the next week.
That's right. I remember. We were sleeping outside in the front yard.
Yeah, we had friends' RV down the street making hot chocolate for everybody.
Yeah. Anyway, heart goes out to everyone in Mexico who's affected by this, and we will keep you guys updated on the story as it develops. All right. Yesterday, we covered a story regarding the protests that were taking place in St. Louis and the number of people who were arrested for allegedly vandalizing property. Now, while we were doing commentary of that story, a number of our viewers brought attention to a video that had gone viral online, and I wanted to do my own investigation of it to, either confirm it or figure out what's really going on. So, as many as 80 people got arrested in one night because of alleged violence that broke out during nightfall in St. Louis. Now, the protest took place in response to a cop who shot and killed a black man, and how the case ended up with his, he wasn't found guilty. The judge in the case did not find him guilty of murder. So people were upset about it. They took to the streets, they protested. The protests were largely peaceful, but as soon as it got dark outside, a small group of people, according to police, started vandalizing property and causing trouble. Now, the video that our audience brought attention to featured what appeared to be a cop in St. Louis vandalizing a restaurant by breaking a window, okay? So a video shot appears to show a police officer breaking the glass window in front of a Culpepper's restaurant, leading to many people questioning whether the officer was responsible for damage attributed to protesters. Now, this is a serious concern because some are alleging that there were agitators there who attempted to make the protesters appear to be violent, maybe provocateurs. So when this was brought to my attention, I did want to look into it. Now, Chris Phillips, who's a filmmaker, is the person who filmed that video that went viral. I want to show you that video and then give you the update in terms of whether or not the cop is actually guilty of the vandalism. Take a look.
Culpepper's, it's Culpepper's.
Yeah, Culpepper's.
He's kicking it down.
Let him do it, and he just on the side. And he literally just took a thing and completely busted it. Two of them by themselves, literally just busted it.
Okay, so when I saw that, that was cause for concern, of course. And so Riverfront Times was the news organization that published that video, that put it out there. That's the story that went viral. They have just done an update to the story, and I want to make sure that we have all the facts and you can draw your own conclusions based on what we know. Now, there was a resident in the area by the name of Katie O'Connor who said, no, that's actually not the case. That window was already broken. In fact, we had taken a photo of that broken window 30 minutes prior to that video, and there was a timestamp on the picture to prove it. Let's go to graphic 6, which shows the picture that Katie O'Connor shared with the press, and that shows you the restaurant's window already broken. Again, 30 minutes prior to that video taken. Katie O'Connor, who lives in the neighborhood, says she and her husband witnessed a young man throw something at Culpepper's through what was then an unbroken window around 11 p.m. breaking it. She was quoted as saying, I don't truly know the officer's motivation. Maybe he was breaking out glass as an asshole move. Maybe he was clearing out dangerous shards, which did exist. But I'm absolutely positive he was not the one who originally broke that window. Now, to add more evidence to that argument, the police department released surveillance from the area showing what occurred prior to the officer being seen at that area or in that area. So this is, again, surveillance footage, and here's what it shows. Take a look. So obviously you can't see whether or not that guy throwing something broke the window, but it appears that he threw something at the window that could have broken it. And then who knows what the cop was doing, because you heard in that video that there was something breaking.
Yes.
Right? So look, I'm giving you guys all the evidence that we have because I think it's interesting and people are outraged and angry about it. I think that it would be incredibly stupid for the cop to break that window knowing that there are so many people surrounding him with phones and they're filming everything that's going on. But that's where the story stands at the moment, and I wanted to make sure I gave you all the details.
The cop seemed to have done a stupid thing, at least in his own mind, because he got the hell away from that window as soon as he made that loud noise.
That's right. It looks very incriminating.
It was just like, oh, God. So yeah. I wonder if he was playing with the shards or whatever, because I do believe the time stamping reporting and that it was broken. And it didn't seem like he was on purpose trying to make people safer by cleaning out the shards.
Yeah, and also honestly, you're messing, you're tampering with evidence.
Right.
Like, don't touch those windows. I don't know what he was doing. I think that, you know, if I were his superior, I would ask him, like, why would you do that? You know, if we're arresting people, and by the way, there were reporters who said that they were doing mass arrests, that they were telling the crowds to disperse, but then they wouldn't give them the opportunity to do so, and then they would do the mass arrests. There were reporters who said that. There were reporters who were arrested. And so I'm not gonna sit here and say that, you know, the cops handled it perfectly, because they were also caught on camera chanting, whose streets, our streets. And so if you're there to make sure that the situation doesn't escalate, if you're there to do crowd control and make sure that people don't get hurt and people don't vandalize, the last thing you wanna do is chant, whose streets, our streets, as the cops.
Weird. That's what the cops were chanting?
Yes.
That's terrible.
So
that's such a weird thing to do.
It antagonizes and it escalates the situation, and it's unnecessary, right?
Right.
So look, I wanna thank you guys for bringing that video to my attention, because I did find it fascinating. But
right. It really goes to show what people are feeling in general, their reaction to those videos. Mm-hmm. You know, as before all the evidence comes out. And when you are on the streets and you're frustrated with what happened as the result of that court case, folks are upset. The police officers, you get the feeling toward that. And then when you see this whip pan to the loud sound and the police walk away, it shows more your feelings about it, which I totally understand and get. And I mean, I'm glad that it seems that the police officer wasn't just going to break windows, because that would be terrible if, as some say, it seems like they would pin that on protesters that didn't exist.
Right.
It seems like this has to do with someone who threw something through a window. I'm glad that we seem to have gotten all of the pieces of evidence that paint a picture about it, and we can turn our focus back on the fundamental issue of, you know, police and the public.
Right, exactly. And keep in mind, if you are a cop who is on duty during these protests, look, I get it. You feel like you're under attack because these protests primarily have to do with police brutality and excessive force. But if you are trying to make a point that your job is difficult and you just want to protect and serve, then you shouldn't antagonize the protesters. You shouldn't, you know, chant things that, you know, stroke tension or anger. And essentially, that was part of what went on. Not all the cops. There was a small number of cops that were caught on camera chanting that. But, you know, just put your feelings aside for a second and just do your job and try not to escalate the situation further than it already is escalated.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to take a quick break. Let's do that. When I come back, I'm going to read your TYT lives. And then a small town football team caught burning crosses. What was the response and what is the legal response that school administrators can have? I'll give you that story and more. Earthquake preparedness. That will be the discussion for the post game. We will share personal stories. Brett and I lived through a giant earthquake that occurred in the San Fernando Valley, Los Angeles County, to be specific.
Mm-hmm.
And we have fun stuff to share with you guys.
By the way, there's mindsets that people have that are from California or people that aren't from California, because I've done both. And you guys are the established all your whole lifers.
Where are you from originally?
St. Louis.
St.
I was
Louis.
Born here, but I was in St. Louis when Northridge went down.
Gotcha.
And when the Oakland went down.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you about that.
Yeah, and there
the
was
the way people think that aren't here.
Yeah, I do want to hear it. Because there was a small earthquake last night. Christian and I both felt it. And we both had different reactions. And I want to share those reactions with you guys. Okay? We had a disagreement. Not a tiff, not any type of argument, but a disagreement. Okay,
love it.
All right, so TYT Lives. Daniel says, "Remember, nature doesn't care about your puny human borders and silly political tiffs."
But what if it did? What would it tweet? You know, what would it tweet if it did care about our borders?
Oh God.
Set
Hopefully
that up.
It wouldn't tweet. Hopefully, if that ever happened, Twitter wouldn't even exist anymore.
It's like your mother, but it's Mother Nature.
Yeah. All right, moving on to other news. High school football players in Iowa are under fire after they decided to burn a cross while wearing KKK garb and then proceeded to post about it on social media. So those are five individuals who are part of a small town football team in Creston, Iowa, and they are at Creston High School. And so this debate has emerged regarding what right administrators have to, you know, punish or make these students pay consequences. They have been booted from the football team, so that has already happened. But some are questioning whether or not there are First Amendment protections for the students here. Now, on a school campus, the First Amendment has even more limitations. If the behavior or the speech of a particular student is a distraction and is distracting other students from a sound educational environment, administrators can take matters into their own hands. So there are even more limits on a school campus. However, in this case, this did not happen on a school campus, and they also didn't target a specific student. So the ability for the administrators to pass down any type of punishment is incredibly limited, according to some. So let me give you the details. The five students in the town of Creston staged a cross burning that was captured on social media earlier this month, with all of them wearing white hoods. One held what appeared to be a Confederate flag, another held what appeared to be an assault rifle. Now, here are the arguments in regard to what administrators can do in terms of punishments. Because the students are minors, the school did not reveal what disciplinary action was taken. They have been removed from the football team, but as unsettling as the act was, it's not clear that it's legally appropriate for the school to mete out a punishment. So there is precedent regarding incidents like this. Now, not necessarily racial issues, but issues where students have done something questionable, administrators wanted to take action, and then the Supreme Court ruled on it. So let me give you the examples. In 1992, for instance, the Supreme Court overturned the conviction of a teenager who burned a cross on the lawn of an African American family. They overturned it. Then in 2003, the court struck down a Virginia statute that prohibited cross burning based on the distinction between intimidation or direct threat and messages of shared ideology. So if it is a direct threat, if they are targeting a specific individual, there is a case to be made that the administrators can, you know, dole out some sort of punishment. However, if it's just a political statement, which in this case, the argument is that they're making a political statement, even though it's disgusting, well, then administrators can't do anything about that. Thoughts?
I mean, definitely off the football team. Yeah. That's what I mean. I get it.
They have black football teammates. Like,
yes. Yeah. And this is not an ambiguous symbol. Mm-hmm. The wearing of a, you know, they talk about the ambiguity as to whether it's directed at any individual, but there's nothing less ambiguous than wearing a hood like this and burning a cross. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I would stay within the legal bounds of whatever the school board can or cannot do. I would go to the furthest extent. And getting them off the football team is a good start, but this is not like a sun rising or a sun setting. You make the call. This is like the name Adolf, a swastika. These are very clear indicators that you do not, that you are affiliating yourself with a hate group. Mm-hmm. And by that definition, I would go as far as possible. I'm struck by the one of those decisions that you mentioned where like a teenager burned a cross on the lawn of an African American family and they overturned the conviction.
Right.
But like, how is that possible? There's no legal remedy. There's no criminal case you could, or criminal punishment that you could bring against that person. I think you absolutely have to.
Right. I mean, and look, I really want to look into the details of that ruling because based on what I know right now, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean,
like trespassing or landscape vandalism.
Right. I mean, if it was on private property, you can at least make the case that there was trespassing. And I mean, can you imagine someone burning a cross on your front lawn and then the Supreme Court, you know, overturning a conviction? Mm. I mean, that's insane. But I will look into that. Look, I do agree that the administrators power is limited in this case because it happened when class was not in session. It didn't happen on the school campus, and this doesn't just have to do with racial issues. I mean, this issue comes up a lot when it comes to bullying. You know, either online or after school hours. What can administrators do to punish those who are bullying other students? Right. So I don't know how this is going to play out. Precedent doesn't look good, right?
Well, yeah, and it's also how liberal I'm going to be, I guess, for lack of a better word, is on the one hand, part of me is like, you're off the football team, you're expelled from the school. This is not the kind of behavior that we think is befitting of the people who attend here. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna put severe, at least extended suspensions on you because this does seem like the kind of thing that kids do for attention probably. Mm-hmm. And it's stupid, it's misguided. And I think they need to suffer consequences or there's no reason to have a school in the first place because we're teaching kids things and we can't reinforce this. And we need to find a way so that they know that what they did is bad. Another thing, it's like more of an educational and behavioral developmental psychology thing, uh-huh, is when you read up on kids who get out into like weird little subcultures like white supremacist groups, a lot of the, I mean, I've read a couple books on this and a lot of them point to having a community.
Yeah,
that isn't,
it's like a gang.
It's gang behavior, terrorist behavior in different parts of the world. But for teenage-ness itself is like a construct invented by Americans in the 50s, a lot of them say, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But to have a community that doesn't reinforce the behavior of white supremacy, the textbook example of that is a football team.
Yeah.
Where people of all different backgrounds have to come together and work together. But it depends on how good the coach is at making that happen, of sitting these kids down together and saying, listen, this is not going to fly. But I think that's after some very concrete punishment that's put into play. But if they're off, they're going to join and reinforce this white supremacist subgroup unless there is massive pushback from the community and from the school board and from the football team and everyone that they come into contact with, that this is not acceptable and this is not okay.
So this didn't take place on campus during all hours, as you guys mentioned.
Right.
Because then the wonder is how much they can do. But if you think these guys who are participating in this kind of action when they're not at school, if it isn't being discussed, talked about, implemented.
On campus.
Happening in the rest of their lives, you're crazy. So this is why the perception of, there was the guy who murdered a couple of black guys in Baton Rouge. And that one of the headlines or things said, clean cut all American white guy does this, right? And it's like, oh, how could this happen? Because it's actually within the community, it's in his mindset, it's who he is. So that perception of this, oh, it's just a white guy who made a mistake and he had some youthful exuberance and all that bullshit, it's actually real. So let's think about the scary people there. So if there's a Latino or a black gang, or there's guys who are in gangs and they go to school. Mm-hmm. We know there's those metal detectors at schools in bad communities because they're wondering, they're gonna bring this stuff into the school. How do we not think that this gang isn't gonna bring their stuff into the school? So they start banning these gang members from coming into schools or making sure they don't bring their BS into that school. We have to see it the same way. So we're afraid of those minority gangs, but why aren't we afraid of this gang who has a very long history of doing things to harm people? If anything, it's to protect your school. So it's just a perception of these kind of guys that go, oh, well, they're bad guys and they can hurt people. But they're not that bad. It's just a after school activity rather than their life.
So what's the solution? Is it like rehabilitating? Is it a rehabilitation kind of thing? Like, I mean, that's what I mean by like, right. How liberal am I? Because like, I feel like such a puss if I'm just gonna say like, let's take all the gang member, let's take the white kid, and let's make them better through school.
Look,
like,
I
you know,
it's,
like
it's
I versus like, let's said, have everyone get a
has
punishment.
To change, because sorry.
No, you finish your thought.
No, I'm saying it's the community. So how do you, it's like with our society in general. How do you change that? There's the bad apples in the police department, but really that ends up destroying all of the people because they started protecting each other. So how do you change the mindset of a society? Because all police officers are, as I've said before, are just members of society that have a job where they can shoot you later when they're working. So how do you change people's perception? It's really hard to do. It's a hard question to answer.
I have an answer for that, okay? So by the way, I wanna be clear about something, because there is what I would wanna do, and then there's what the law would allow me to do,
right?
And so if I just acted based on my own instinct and did what I wanted to do and ignored the law, they're out. They're completely out. But I'm just simply telling you what kind of protections these students have, which by the way, I'm very curious, you know, if similar protections would be extended. I mean, would we have this kind of debate? And I think this is goes to your point, JR. Would we have this kind of debate if you had a group of black students from this college, or I'm sorry, this high school, getting together and talking about, I don't even know, doing something that's perceived as racist toward white students? I mean, that would be a national story that people would not stop talking about. This happened a month ago and I didn't even know it occurred. It didn't even get any coverage until now, right? So anyway, the
it's
point that I wanted-
look like such wuss bags with their, they look so ridiculous is I think what it is.
Yeah, they do look ridiculous. And look, whether they wanted this for attention or whether they actually believe, you know, in what they're doing, that doesn't matter. What does matter in my eyes is education, because education is what hopefully will weed out this type of ignorance, because it stems from ignorance. It's this insensitivity to a really dark time in America that unfortunately is now experiencing a reemergence. But if I were an educator on that campus and I found out that the students are doing this, okay, I am going to emphasize certain things in my curriculum for the rest of the semester. Right? And so if you think this is cute and you think this is funny, let's have a discussion about lynchings. Let's have a real discussion about America's history. Because the funny thing is, conservatives argue that, liberal indoctrinations on school campuses. Really? Because if there were a liberal indoctrination and, you know, these liberal educators were as effective as you think they were, you think people would take this as a joke? Right? If anything, I think that we have moved so far behind effective like history education, social studies education. Like, it's fucking devastating. Like, these kids don't know what they're doing. They're kids. They don't know what they're doing. And so, okay,
but they
I guess they should.
The thing
so
is,
let's
like,
have a refresher. Let's have an actual discussion about what happened during the Civil War. I'm not talking about sharing my opinion. Who cares about my opinion?
Right.
Let's talk about actual facts, what this country went through, because I guess a lot of people have forgotten.
But it just goes back to the unambiguity, the lack of ambiguity of hoods and burning crosses. Like, you know, it's. I get it. I mean, I get the frustration because it's like that's you're the. I mean, you want to make a distinction between gang members and a clan, a gang and a clan. That's the same word.
Yeah, you know? That's right. That's right.
I don't.
It's so pathetic.
So bring their dumbass parents in too, because that's where they learned it from.
Yeah.
Young idiot racist kids turn into old idiot adults who are just as racist and have even more power and start passing this down to the next generation. Like I said, you gotta bring in everybody to teach them something, but who has the patience to teach these idiots something or the, I don't know. You don't wanna sit down and talk to these guys, but I mean.
Get them on a
fire
code
violation.
Why
we have a discussion about whether or not we're gonna change who they are. But again, the counterparts, what some people think of violence of other people, they say, oh, lock them up, send them to juvie, F them, get them out of here. I'm ready to go that route. You just fucked up. Your life is over. Go away.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Oh, God, it's so disappointing. Anytime these like devastating stories about racial tension come up, like the one thing that I would always fall back on to make myself feel a little better is that, oh, young people are smarter. But no, they're not.
These young people are stupid. Let's put it that way.
Extremely stupid. And also, you know, that hate rally in Charlottesville, those weren't middle-aged white dudes. They were young, early 20s, late teens, white guys, for the
most
part.
We're gonna talk about it in the next story.
Yeah, okay, so let's discuss them. The so-called alt-right, which I like to call white supremacists because that's what they really are, apparently have a beef with Jennifer Lawrence, who's a white actress, so what's the issue here? Well, it turns out that they think that she is attacking them when in reality she's not. And the latest issue has to do with a movie that she stars in called Mother, with an exclamation mark at the end. Now, Mother is an experimental film. It is a psychological thriller, and there are a lot of references to religion there. So the religious right in the country has an issue with that because they think that their religion is being utilized to send a political anti-climate change message, okay? So, to give you an example of some of the criticism that Jennifer Lawrence has faced because she's in this movie, a Breitbart editor by the name of John Nolte writes, "The chickens have finally come home to roost for Jennifer Lawrence's hateful mouth. Mother is a catastrophe for Lawrence, one of Hollywood's most stridently bigoted former stars." Every time I hear someone from the so-called alt-right talk, all that really like comes out is, look at these attractive women that won't have sex with me. Like, I'm so frustrated, right? Like, I don't know.
Incel, involuntary celibacy. It's a whole subgenre of guys just like this. She won't bang you ever. It feels like they're trying to run up to her and pull her hair on the play yard and be like, I don't love you at all, and then run away. Not to mention, go ahead, sorry.
Okay, so Jennifer Lawrence talks about the film, and this doesn't really give you any spoilers, but it kind of explains what the meaning of the film is. And like I said, there are a ton of religious references there. So according to Jennifer Lawrence, it depicts the rape and torment of Mother Earth. It's not for everybody, it's a hard film to watch, but it's important for people to understand the allegory we intended, that they know I represent Mother Earth. Javier, meaning Javier Bardem, whose character is a poet, represents a form of God. A creator, Michelle Pfeiffer, is an Eve to Ed Harris's Adam, and the setting sometimes resembles the Garden of Eden. Okay, so the religious right upset, don't touch our religion, especially when you're trying to make a political point about climate change. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's why no one saw the movie. What she just said there is because it's so laden with symbolism and it disappears so far up its own ass with trying to create an allegory, then no one liked this movie. Like CinemaScore gave it an F. Before showing it at the latest festival, Aronofsky said, you're gonna hate me in an hour and a half. And the reason for that is it is one of those things where he did Black Swan and that was accessible because it was enjoyable from both a narrative and a symbolic perspective. By all accounts, Mother is a bad movie because it has no redeeming narrative. It is all you having to figure out what does her hair symbolize and what does the color of the background symbolize. That's why no one saw the movie. That's why it made whatever $3 million in its box office or $7.5 million globally in its box office. Because it's the kind of movie whose title is lowercase with an exclamation point at the end. Like, that's why people didn't see it. These alt-right guys are swooping in over the corpse of this failed blockbuster attempt and saying, that was us. But the truth is, no, it wasn't you at all. That's like, you know, your rival lost a football game and you're saying, it's because I was rooting against them. No, they just weren't, it was a bad team, it was a bad game.
Yeah, so the movie has gotten a lot of criticism, but you're right, the alt-right's kind of like, latching onto it and saying it's because of our boycott, but it's not because of your boycott. It was based on what I've read from the critics, just a bad film and like too overly artistic to the point where a lot of people were like,
right.
I don't want to spend too much time interpreting what's going
on. It's all the double dildo scene from his other movie.
Double dildo scene.
Really? What was that one with Jennifer Connelly? Oh God, what was it called? We need Bart. Bart knows it.
Requiem for a Dream.
It's all Requiem for a Dream double dildo scene without like the, that's what it is.
Did you see it?
I didn't see Mother, but from all accounts of what I've read, the other thing is you're not going to see Mother. Mm-hmm. So I can say that to you. Like no one's going to go see it.
You know
why? It is almost to the point where it's gotten so universally panned, your expectations are low enough where you can go see it. And if it's as bad as everyone says, you can enjoy it because it's so terrible. And if it's not as bad as everybody says, you can be like, it wasn't that bad. People are giving it a tough rap, bad rap.
Okay. Well, okay. So there was the movie situation. And then, in my opinion, the funnier situation had to do with a Vogue cover that Jennifer Lawrence was on. By the way, like, who has time to think about this kind of stuff? Like, if I saw that at a newsstand, I'd be like, oh, okay, typical Vogue cover, whatever. But the alt-right felt that this cover was an assault and an attack on them.
Why?
What?
Okay, I mean, obviously. Now that I look at it, it's pretty obvious.
What? Okay, so let me give you the details. Real quick. So according to Newsweek, divisions between Lawrence and the alt-right erupted in August when she was photographed in front of the Statue of Liberty for the cover of Vogue, along with an article titled American Beauty, Jennifer Lawrence on Love, Liberty, and the Freedom to Be Herself. So Breitbart editor John Carney, who again has too much time on his hands, said, we're going to have to create a full Make America Great Again or MAGA shadow culture industry because the opposition media can't even do fashion without attacking us.
That sentence looks like it was created by like some like auto sentence generator of alt-right words.
Okay, so here's what their theory was. Do you guys remember when Stephen Miller, that's his name, right? Stephen Miller was having that debate with Jim Acosta about the Statue of Liberty and immigrants, right? And so Acosta was like, hey, bring me, you're tired, you're poor, like, what the Statue of Liberty says. They got into a disagreement. Steve Miller said, no, that was added later, as if that's relevant. And so the alt-right thought that Vogue, I mean, this is how crazy they are. They thought Vogue did that cover as some sort of like attack against the alt-right. And it was like some sort of comment on immigration. Little did they know that they actually shot that cover a month before that exchange occurred. Okay, you guys are insane. You guys are crazy, and that's why no one wants to sleep with you.
Another nod to, I mean, or not nod, but illustration of the projection that has to happen when, I wish these oppressed people that keep talking about how oppressed they are, get over it, number one. How much has America changed, and why do you keep playing the race card? It's because they want to do that over nothing. Everything has to do with you. Vogue is just can't wait to get on the 15 people of you that are sitting around bitching about everything all the time. Oh, it's about us. Oh, you just want to make America. I thought you were powerful. I thought you had the president. I thought the president had a sweepingly like killer election where he took everyone out. Mm-hmm. You're weak? Which one is it? Are you strong or are you weak?
Weak. You're right.
That sounds like cucky language. You know what I'm saying? Like cucky behavior.
I want to like take a bath after I hear the word cuck.
I like the word cuck.
I don't like it at all. It's like, I can't even like make fun of it because it makes me feel so icky.
Why?
I don't like it.
You know, cuck is a real thing.
Oh yeah.
There, it's a subculture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. Oh, I did. Once it started trending, I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean,
creepy.
You know what? If
same as incel. Incel is the most cucky of it all.
I don't know what incel is.
Involuntary celibacy. It's people
that's
right. who are like, these women are so up their own butts that they don't realize what a catch I am. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it's because you're complaining and weak. That's why they don't like you.
Yeah, and also joining a group of people who whine and complain about how women don't want to sleep with you doesn't somehow miraculously convince women to sleep with you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if someone that you want to have sex with is rejecting you, you don't necessarily blame the person rejecting you. Like, I don't know, maybe there's something about you that person just isn't into, right? Maybe it's just a preference thing, maybe you're just weird and unattractive, like, and I'm not talking about physically, although that also plays a role. But maybe you support really terrible things, and that's why, you know, you're part of what is it called? Incel.
Incel.
Huh.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know. Ugh.
All right, we are almost out of time, so I want to take a quick minute.
Take a minute.
Quick minute to thank you guys for watching, and also if you are a member, please check out the postgame show today. JR, are you going to stick around?
Fine, whatever. I mean, last time it happened, what did it blew up, right? It was a fan favorite.
Yes.
Anna said no one disliked it.
I did not say that.
Everybody loved it.
Quoting Anna Kessler.
I want to hear from these idiots who didn't like it.
No, don't call our members.
No, I'm not our members. I love them, all the smart members, but the people who didn't like it seem to be idiots.
By the way, I don't know who liked it and didn't like it. I'm completely making all this stuff up.
She's being modest.
All
right. She knows.
So, by the way, real quick, if you like old school, there will be an old school episode this week, even though Cenk is out of town. So far, the hosts include myself and Kim Horcher. There will be a third person, I believe. So check that out. If you aren't a member, you can join by going to tytnetwork.com/join. Not only do you support us here in studio, but you also support our entire team, the awesome producers, the awesome staff, the reporters. We love you guys. Thank you so much for keeping us independent. Thank you to Brett. And we'll see you guys tomorrow.
JR, damn it.
Bye-bye.